You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 24th of November 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, before we get into the news today, I just wanted to talk about something briefly. This attack in Waukesha, this SUV that was driven into lots of white people and injured lots of children and killed people. And I mean, obviously white people have noticed that this is a black guy that's killed white people. He's put out lots of anti-white sentiments in his social media. And it seems quite clear to me that what's happened is he's been leaving the scene of some other crime and he's seen all these white people there and thought, well, I'm going to get arrested for this other crime anyway. I might as well run down all these white people and take this chance and do that, which really shows a hatred of white people. And there are memes that have been put out and they're saying justice for Waukesha. And this is obviously a play on Black Lives Matter. And whenever somebody black is killed by the police, usually they're armed, usually they're resisting arrest, and Black Lives Matter will instantly say justice for whoever it is, justice for George Floyd, justice for Breonna Taylor, justice for whatever. So what we have here is white people or nationalist patriots responding in exactly the same way that Black Lives Matter do, saying justice for Waukesha. And I think when people look at that, because of the way that nationalists are portrayed in the media, people are going to be thinking, well, what do they mean by justice for this? Are they calling for attacks on black people? Obviously, that's not what is meant. What is meant is justice, lawful justice. But more than that, I think our response should not be like that. I mean, it's like a tit for tat. Black radicals upset at the Rittenhouse trial because they were riled up by the mainstream media and told that he killed black people when he didn't. So they saw that as a racial thing. So they saw that as them losing a racial competition there. And they're angry at us for this. And they get angry. And we are now angry at them for killing us in the same way as we would get angry at Islamic extremists for carrying out terrorist atrocities against white people. And we want justice for that. And it all seems like tit for tat. And it's like, well, where is the end to this? Where is the solution to this? We should be calling for a solution to this. We shouldn't be reacting to it. We should be preempting it and trying to prevent these sort of things from ever happening again. So we don't have to call for justice. We don't have to call for compensation, or we want to be finding ways to prevent these things from happening in the first place, not calling for more punishments for people that carry them out. And the only way that we can prevent this is to have an end to multiculturalism. If there was no multiculturalism, that attack could not have happened. The dancing grannies would still be alive. The children would still be uninjured. The black guy that did this, he wouldn't have had this grievance against white people because he would have had no interest in this trial, the Rittenhouse trial, because it would have just involved white people. It wouldn't have involved black people. It wouldn't have been anything to do with racial justice riots, which is the way that they were portrayed. I mean, it came under the tagline of racial justice in the mainstream media, the Rittenhouse incident and the Rittenhouse trial. So I think this is the way we need to respond to all of these things. We need to be calling for an end to multiculturalism and pointing out the ways that that would benefit all ethnicities. I mean, it wouldn't just benefit white people. It would benefit black people. It would benefit Asian people. All the different people groups would benefit from there being no multiculturalism. And people will say, well, surely that's not going to benefit that's not going to benefit the Nigerian who came over here on a boat who can only earn $1 a month in Nigeria. That's not going to benefit him. Well, we're not talking about individuals here. We're talking about groups, benefits for the group. And it's the individual desire to gain more for the individual that leads to people leaving their countries and coming to white countries in the first place. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about groups. We're talking about what is of benefit to the group. And that individual that comes here, I mean, he really has nothing without his people group. He may be an adult now and he may be able to make his way to Britain. But before he was an adult, he was relying on his family. He was relying on his people. And he's really sort of turning his back on them and saying, I'm not going to pay you back for everything you did. I'm going to take what I can by coming into Europe. And white people have the same mentality. We have this same mentality, or a lot of us do, that we're just going to get what we can for ourselves and not think about the group. We're encouraged to do that with capitalism. We're encouraged to think that it's our human right to make as much profit as we possibly can out of the people around us. And it's that whole mentality that is wrong. But the way that I think we need to frame these things is to preempt them and say, well, the solution to terrorism, the solution to racism, the solution to grooming gangs, all of these things, to prevent them from ever having a chance to happen in the first place, all we would have to do is end the policy of multiculturalism and encourage groups to live within their own groups. Obviously, the best way to do that would be for people to have their own groups in their own countries. But if you have countries which are already multicultural, that have been so for some years, places like America, what you could do is you could just say, well, the states that have the most numbers of whatever ethnicity, they should be encouraged to move to that state. And until you ended up with areas that were mainly of one ethnicity, and you could still have people that like multiculturalism that didn't agree with an end to multiculturalism. They could still live in areas with multiculturalism if they wanted. I think this is a solution that would appeal to everyone, really, and it would do away with all the modern problems that we have. So rather than calling for justice for Wokisha or calling for justice for the latest terror attack on white people, we should be preempting that and just calling for an end to multiculturalism so that none of these things can happen. Rather than calling for stricter punishments and policies like ban the burqa or on stopping madrasas or having stricter laws on these groups to try to get them to change their culture, we should just say, no, and keep your culture. And we'll encourage you to live among your own people, and we'll pay for voluntary repatriation to go back to your ancestral homelands and things like that. I mean, the sort of things that Patriotic Alternative advocate for. And that would be a peaceful solution to all of this. Anyway, I wanted to get into this Charlottesville trial that has now finished, that has been going on for about the last month. And it's a real shame that wasn't videoed. It does sound as if it was very interesting. I was following Jason Kessler's Telegram feed until he got asked to stop reporting on it because he was actually one of the defendants. And his reporting up to that point was excellent, very, very insightful. And I recommend people go to his Telegram feed and have a look at that. It looks like it was a very interesting trial. Some of the defendants were defending themselves because they couldn't afford to have lawyers. And you have this absurd situation where you have Christopher Cantwell, who is currently in prison, having to defend himself because he doesn't get legal aid. And these defendants were up against some of the best lawyers that money can buy. Literally millions had gone into this, going after these people who really don't have any money themselves, and accusing them of conspiring together to commit violence. And yet it was shown during the trial that a successful demonstration was a demonstration where there was no violence. This was very clearly shown. It was very clearly shown that there wasn't a conspiracy to, quote unquote, start a race war, however ridiculous that is. I mean, these ideas that our opponents have about us are just cloud cuckoo land. I mean, why would somebody want to start a race war, whatever that is? You have ethno-nationalists, which probably make up less than 1% of the country, and everybody else is all tied up in this idea that diversity is a strength and multiculturalism is absolutely wonderful. And the minute somebody white tried to fight against people just because they were black or whatever, I mean, they would be absolutely hated by the rest of the country, and the state would come down on them like a ton of bricks, would absolutely squash them. All nationalism would be banned. We would be seen as violent terrorists. It's just absolutely ludicrous. I mean, Mark Collette has pointed out that the closest thing that you would actually get to a race war would be looking at the Black Lives Matter riots last year, with the rioting and the looting and the setting fire to whole cities and whole blocks in cities. And that was based upon race. It was racial animus that was based upon. It's taglined racial justice protests in the mainstream media. And it was anger at white people that was going on there. And if you happened to be a white man in that area, you needed to run as fast as you could. If anybody did try to defend themselves against the rioters, well, we saw what happened with Kyle Rittenhouse, didn't we? He tried to defend stores against the rioters and the looters, and three rioters tried to kill him. Somebody tried to smash him around the head with a skateboard. Another one of them pulled a gun on him. Another one tried to pull the gun off him. So he defended himself and he shot the attackers. And he was accused of murder. And we just had this very famous trial that was all seen all around the world. And that's what happens if you try to defend yourself. So if a situation like that happens, you just have to run. You don't stand there and try to defend yourself and think that there's going to be a big uprising of people supporting you. You have to run, because you're not just going to be taking on the rioters and the looters. You're also going to be taking on the state, because the state are going to claim that you were the aggressor in this. So this whole concept of race war is just ridiculous. I mean, people might use it as a just as a descriptive term, as an exaggeration for the competition, that just the normal competition that goes on between extended kinship groups. You know, these groups do compete within society for power and for influence. And there is also victims on either side, because if you have different ethnic groups in society and you have every ethnic group has criminal elements within it, and those criminal elements are going to find it easier to carry out their crimes upon members of the other ethnic groups. And you could class the victims of those crimes, victims of crimes by another ethnic group, you could say, well, it's like victims of a war, because these other ethnic groups, the criminal elements within them, are going after my ethnic group because it's easier for them to do that than to carry out crimes against their own. So you could use it as a literary device, and people have done in the past. And the reason for doing that in the past was to exaggerate what is going on, to try and get people to see themselves as being a part of their ethnic group and advocating for the rights for their ethnic group. Certainly not advocating for violence or for a military response to things. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, so we have things like a war of words, we have info wars, we have culture wars, and none of that means, none of that implies a military response to these things. So this terminology, race war, it's just very convenient for our opponents to use that and claim that anybody that refers to that is trying to encourage violence between the different ethnic groups. We don't want violence, we just want to separate from them. So this trial, there was a lot of interest in it. It didn't really get covered very much in Britain. There was an audio feed of it. People could telephone in and they could listen to it. And Jason Kessler has been providing transcripts of the trial. I haven't had the time yet to read them. And it was hoped at the end of the trial that the plaintiffs would be found innocent. I mean, the plaintiffs were the victims in this. This protest, it was a legal protest. It was protesting against the pulling down of statues. It was supposed to be uniting the right. It was supposed to be everybody on the right wing turning up to protest against these statues. And they had a legal permit to do this. The Antifa and the communists and the extreme left, they did not have a permit to turn up. They turned up. And instead of keeping the two groups separate, as you would expect the police to do, because this was an announced protest and it was a legal protest, you would expect the police to say, right, well, we've got barriers here. You guys on the right, you're going over there into the park, and we'll make sure that these counter-protesters are kept separate from you because we don't want any trouble. Now, instead of doing that, the police didn't keep them apart. And they shut down the protest before it had actually begun, declared a state of emergency, and then they funneled all the right-wing protesters into the waiting left-wing mob. And the left-wing mob attacked the right-wing protesters, and the right-wing protesters defended themselves. Now, because there was this state of emergency, that meant that everybody had to clear the area. So the right-wing protesters left the area. They had to fight their way through this mob of left-wing terrorists before they could actually get to their cars and go. But the right-wing protesters actually left the area, and the left-wing protesters stayed in the area. When James Fields ran over Heather Heyer and these left-wing extremists that were in front of him, they were still in the area that they were supposed to be leaving from. He was trying to leave. I believe that he just pressed the wrong pedal by mistake. I think he panicked. Somebody attacked his car. This was actually brought up in this trial. The video was shown where somebody smashed out his taillight from behind, which I think must have shocked him, and he drove forwards. But of course, the mainstream media had already tried him and found him guilty before he actually went to trial, and he ended up getting something like 400 years for racially motivated murder. I don't think there was an intent to run anybody over. I think the poor lad just panicked. But this recent civil trial in Charlottesville, they were trying to claim that there was a conspiracy with this James Fields as well to commit violence. And yet nobody knew of this fellow until the actual day. Well, let's have a look at what the MSN has to say about this. 9 people injured during the 2017 Unite the Right rally in downtown Charlottesville, Virginia, are entitled to more than $25 million in financial compensation, a jury declared Tuesday in reaching a partial verdict. But it could not agree on the most serious claims that the defendants, about 24 white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and key organizers, engaged in a conspiracy to commit violence under federal law. So, 2 things here. $25 million in financial compensation from people that do not even have enough money to pay for a lawyer. This is what the plaintiffs were hoping to do, you see. They wanted to use civil means to bankrupt the people involved, to try and put people off ever having a protest ever again, because they would get charged or get fined millions of dollars for doing so. So they've succeeded in doing that. And the second point is, the way that this news report just uses ad hominems against the defendants, calls them white supremacists and neo-Nazis. I mean, they're just basically outright calling them slur words. Would the defendants themselves describe themselves as white supremacists or neo-Nazis? Jason Kessler is certainly not a white supremacist, and he was the organizer. And this charge of conspiracy, he essentially had the role that he had taken from him. There was a conspiracy against Jason Kessler to take over his leadership role, and that was shown at this trial. So if any conspiracy was going on, it was a conspiracy to remove Jason Kessler from being the leader of this protest, because he really wasn't that well known, and to replace him with Richard Spencer. The jury of 11 deliberated for more than 3 days following 4 weeks of testimony in the civil trial in a federal court in Charlottesville. The plaintiffs, all from Charlottesville, described broken bones, the bloodshed, and emotional trauma resulting from the mayhem. The defendants, some self-described racists and white nationalists, argued they were exercising their First Amendment rights in organizing and participating in the rally. And they were. They had a permit to be there, and their First Amendment rights are their rights to free speech. And there would have been no broken bones, bloodshed, or emotional trauma if the police had actually done their job. And there was a report into this. There was an investigation into this, an official investigation, and it did say that it was the police that were at fault here. The guy that was, I think he was the head of the police, he had decided that what they were going to do is announce a national emergency and prevent it from actually going ahead. He had tried to stop it 2 days before, but Jason had gone to the ACLU, and the ACLU had taken it to court and said, no, you've got to let these guys have their free speech. They want to have a protest against these statues being pulled down, and you have to let them. So the Charlottesville city should have protected those rights. That's what they were supposed to do. They were supposed to ensure that the Unite the Right protest was able to go ahead, and they didn't. They had no intention of letting it go ahead. I mean, that's very clear from the communications that were actually released. The case, known as Sines v. Kessler, was the first major lawsuit in years to be tried under the so-called Ku Klux Klan Act, a rarely used federal law codified after the Civil War. It was installed to diminish the power of white supremacists and to protect African Americans, prohibiting discrimination in voting and other rights. And I really don't see how anybody was being discriminated against here, apart from the right-wing protesters who were prevented from having their protest and were essentially prevented from defending themselves against the people attacking them. And they were defending themselves. I mean, these Antifa that turned up, they all turned up with weapons, or lots of them turned up with weapons and mag lights. And when you actually look at the nationalists that turned up, they turned up with shields and helmets. They did not turn up with weapons. They turned up with defensive headwear and defense so that they could actually defend themselves, because there had been so many attacks on right-wing protesters that summer. There was the Battle of Berkeley. Lots of patriotic, mainstream patriotic speakers were prevented from speaking at universities because anybody that went to see them was attacked. And this was happening all over America at the time. So the patriotic protesters against the statues, that they turned up with protective clothing on, but they didn't turn up with weapons. Whereas the anti-fascists and the communists, they turned up with T-shirts talking about killing, well, smash the fash, bash the Nazis, get rid of the Nazis, and they turned up with weapons. There's even footage of somebody with a flamethrower going after the patriots. And the police just pushed these people into them instead of keeping them separate. I mean, from previous protests, criticism can be leveled at it that they should have realized that something like that might happen, that they would be pushed into the left-wing protesters, and the left-wing protesters would not be charged for attacking the nationalists. They would not be arrested, and if the nationalists did defend themselves back, they would be arrested and charged with starting the violence, because there is a precedent for that. I mean, it does happen at protests. That's why people don't tend to pre-announce that they're actually holding protests anymore. But this was set up by people that were all relatively new to nationalism. I mean, nobody had really heard of Jason Kessler before. That this it wasn't organizations that had been going for a long time. The only organization I think that had actually been going for a long time was the League of the South. And they managed to defend themselves very well at the trial. They pointed out anybody who's ever ended up with a broken nose before in a fight knows that you do all that you can to avoid a fight. You don't try and pick fights. You avoid fights. And yet the whole mentality of this court case was trying to say that these nationalists were just trying to pick a fight. And yet they still found the League of the South guilty. In making its decision, the jury had to find that the defendants, who include Jason Kessler, the lead organizer of the rally, and Richard Spencer, a white nationalist who coined the term alt-right, entered into a conspiracy to commit violence. But the jury was deadlocked in the first two claims of a federal race-based conspiracy to interfere with civil rights and action for neglect to prevent. I mean, how could they say that it was the nationalists that were trying to interfere with civil rights? It was their civil rights to protest and their right to free speech that was interfered with. And it is literally the opposite of what is being claimed here is what actually went on. And this really just shows you what you can do with money, doesn't it? When you've got millions of dollars to spend on lawfare, you can just about achieve whatever you want through the courts, even though it's completely against all systems of justice or all understanding of justice and fairness that we've had up until now. I mean, this is why it was a civil case. It wasn't actually the police that were taking them to court on this. It was a civil case. The jury also agreed on a range of punitive damages on the other claims, including assault and battery and intentional infliction of emotional distress, awarding more than $25 million to the plaintiffs. And they've really got no chance of getting that because the people they've gone after have got nothing. I mean, you can't get blood out of a stone. On the claim that the defendants violated Virginia's civil conspiracy law, the jury awarded $500,000 in punitive damages against all 12 individual defendants, including Kessler and Spencer, and $1 million against five white nationalist organizations. And I mean, these organizations, they're just people that give their time voluntarily. They don't have access to huge funds. Most of them have had their PayPals taken away from them. They can't use any credit card platforms to get donations. The only way they can get donations is people posting them cash in the post. And yet they will use everything they can to try and shut these people down just because they can't stand to hear other people having a different point of view. I mean, that's what this boils down to. And it is absolute bigotry here of the worst kind, saying, we don't want you to speak. We don't like what you're saying. So we're going to prevent you from being able to say what you want. We're going to prevent you with violence. And then when you defend yourselves against the violence, we're then going to take you to court and accuse you of starting the violence. And we're going to take you for every penny you have. I mean, it's really vicious what has gone on here. Among the evidence were text messages, social media posts, and conversations on Discord, an online chat platform, in which organizers discussed and meticulously coordinated the two-day event, which was held in response to Charlottesville's planned removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Now, using chat platforms, I mean, people say silly things, and what they did, they used basically people that didn't go to the protest, weren't actually the defendants, stupid things that they had said online, over-the-top violent things, and then claimed that this was all meant to be taken seriously. And if you remember some of the catchphrases that people had in 2017, I mean, they were ludicrously over-the-top. Nobody actually meant them to be taken seriously. The reason why people were saying things like that was to try and push the Overton window. And what I mean by that is people would say extreme things on the right, and the more extreme things got accepted being heard, then it meant that the more moderate people on the right appeared to be more acceptable. It's the same mentality that the homosexuals used for gay pride. Now, the reason why they came up with gay pride is because they said, well, if we show the most extreme side of homosexuality, to the public at a big parade and on a special day, and if we're the most over the top we can possibly be, then it means that when the public see homosexual activities that aren't so over the top, they will be much more accepted, because they'll say, well, at least they're not doing that. And it's the same mentality here with the Overton window. It was be as extreme as we possibly can in our rhetoric, and then Donald Trump's rhetoric won't seem so extreme. And we'll be able to push the Overton window. We'll be able to get our discussion points out there into the public, and we'll be able to change the narrative. But the actual points that were being made, and a lot of the catchphrases and a lot of the memes, they certainly weren't meant to be taken seriously. I mean, a lot of them were revolving around things like gassing. And of course, the people that were actually doing that are people that don't believe there were any gas chambers used in the Second World War anyway. So it quite clearly, they didn't mean it to be taken literally. And yet that's what happens when you say these things in chat rooms. And that's what happened at this trial. They brought up things that have been said in chat rooms that clearly were not meant to be taken seriously. But when they're said in front of a jury, and not in front of a chat room where people are just going to look at it and laugh, so it's been taken completely out of context, then it portrays the people making those messages as really evil. And the people that are also in that chat room that are not responding and saying, well, you shouldn't be saying that, it portrays them as accepting that and going along with it. You know, we have to be very careful with the things that we say online. A lot of things that that can make people laugh, that are just seen as a joke, can be taken right out of context in a courtroom and be used to jail somebody. The protest turned deadly when James Alex Fields Jr., an Ohio man who revered Adolf Hitler, rammed his car into a crowd, killing Heather Heyer, a civil rights activist. Dozens were also injured in the car attack, including four of the plaintiffs. And of course, they have to say he revered Adolf Hitler, because obviously Adolf Hitler is such a bad, evil man. If anybody likes Adolf Hitler, it must mean that they are desperate to just go out and kill people. And that's the logic that's been used here. Because he liked Adolf Hitler, he must have deliberately wanted to kill these people with his car. Fields, who is serving a life sentence, was named as a defendant in the suit. The jury agreed he must pay $12 million in punitive damages in connection with the attack. Well, how's he going to do that when he's going to be in jail for the next 400 years? The trial included explicit audio of some of the defendants' use of anti-Semitic and racial slurs in conversations. So they didn't actually have audio of them conspiring to commit violence. They've just got them using slang language, jokey language, folk taxonomy, and being critical of Jews. And that was all that was needed to convict these guys. Kessler testified these words were often used to be provocative. And that's what I was pointing out. They're trying to push the Overton window. Jurors also heard messages packed with insider language and codes that expert witnesses said white nationalists used to incite participants in the alt-right movement. Well, we don't have insider language and codes, and the guy that was actually doing that, there's nobody else that has actually confirmed his insider language and codes. He's basically saying that when people mention things that are quite innocent, they're actually referring to doing some violence. And it's this mentality that nationalists just wish to do violence to other races. And it's just incredible to me that anybody could fall for that. You know, people are people. Nobody wants to go out and harm other people. It's just it just doesn't make sense why anybody would want to do that, unless they had a genuine grievance against somebody. And if you're a nationalist, you're talking about groups. You're not talking about individuals. So you're not going to wish harm upon any individuals. It just doesn't make sense. The logic doesn't stack up. And this insider language and codes. This guy that was doing this, he's not actually able to prove any of that, but it seems as if the jury accepted it. Roberta Kaplan, a lawyer for the plaintiffs, had asked jurors to consider awarding millions of dollars in punitive damages, from 7 to 10 million for those physically harmed and 3 to 5 million for emotional pain. And this Roberta Kaplan, I mean, she's a very famous lawyer with millions of dollars behind her, and that's why she was able to do this. The suit is funded by Integrity First for America, a non-profit civil rights organization which lauded the jury's decision despite its partial verdict. The plaintiff's attorneys said they intend to get the first two claims retried since it ended in a hung jury, although they are largely satisfied with the outcome. So, of course, Integrity First for America, a non-profit civil rights organization, they can campaign for money. They can get money from the public, of course. But the people they're going after, they're deplatformed everywhere. They can't use GoFundMe. They can't use PayPal. They can't actually mount a defense against this. Randolph McLaughlin, a professor at the Halb School of Law at Pace University, who successfully used the Ku Klux Klan Act in a civil trial in Tennessee in the 80s, said that for plaintiffs to win on the first two claims, it was imperative that the evidence showed that at least some of the defendants had an agreement to engage in a racially motivated conspiracy and plan illegal acts. But during the trial, some of the defendants denied that was the case and that they barely knew one another, which may have swayed some of the jurors. And this is the other thing that they try, they make out that everybody knows everybody else. If you're a nationalist or if you're on the far right, then you are connected to all of these people. Most of these people had never even met one another before. During the trial, Spencer tried to distance himself from the rally, telling the jury he had no part in its planning, despite being tied to a tiki torch demonstration the night before the event in which people shouted, "Jews will not replace us," on the University of Virginia campus. And of course, well, that is free speech. They have the right to say that. At a hearing last year related to the trial, Spencer said the suit had been financially crippling, and he was in a very difficult situation in terms of getting funds. And of course, Spencer was defending himself in this. The amount awarded the plaintiffs is huge, McLaughlin said, and many of the defendants are sure to lose a lot as a result of the trial. The financial damages may have a negative effect on white nationalist groups and their supporters when trying to organize, recruit, or hold similar events, he added. And that was the whole point of this trial. Was to scare nationalists from organizing or ever holding protests again. Defendants in these types of cases don't typically have deep pockets, so it is not necessarily about the money, McLaughlin said. You're not suing to make about a buck. You are suing to bankrupt them, he added. But a $25 million award sends a strong message that gun-toting Klansmen can't ignore. And why are they bringing the Ku Klux Klan into this? This was a protest to prevent the statues from being destroyed. This was a protest against America's heritage being torn down. It was essentially people saying we don't want the same thing happening in America that we see happening out in Syria and in Iraq, where ISIS are pulling down all these statues. We don't want the same thing to be going on in America. And apparently, according to this, if you disagree with that, then you're no better than the Ku Klux Klan. And it's an absolute scandal that this was able to happen in the first place. And it's even worse that the jury found them guilty. But I do believe that Jason Kessler himself has one of these cases against Charlottesville that may be coming up. So we will see what the result of that is. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.